You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, this is Alex Rodriguez, and you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN New York.
That's right, Alex, you are. It is the Michael K. Show, and it's Kalis for one more day, and then everybody's
one
back together
more
tomorrow.
Day.
Don and Peter with you, flying until 6:30. Then it's Grasa leading into Game 4 of the NBA Finals between the Bucks and the Suns. How are you, brother?
Not today, brother.
No, it's
not
happening today.
Not today, brother.
It's happening today. What's happening today on the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years.
I'm doing pretty good today, Don. How you doing?
Good. It's a nice day. It's a warm day. The kids are home because they're coughing and sneezing and all that, which I've been doing for the better part of 2 weeks. So, listen, things are back to normal, which is great. But the negative of that is that now that we're open to having all the things that you have when you're open. And there's viruses out there that are not COVID that are saying, boy, where have you been, brother? Let's get back together again. Let's reunite. Reunited, and it feels so good. So
yeah, no, I'm
here. Never, ever looked at it from the perspective of the germ.
I've heard this going around a lot, especially for people with kids.
Yeah.
It's certainly popping up.
You know, 6 o'clock this morning, they all wanted to climb into bed and just cough and sneeze, but it's still nice. It's still cool. So we're getting through it. It's a nice day. It's warm. It's humid, but it's not raining, which is nice. And hopefully you have a good weekend. So, but we still got a long way to go before we get to the weekend. And we've got a lot to do today. The NBA Finals obviously gets back together after a couple of days off with Game 4. Pivotal game for the Bucks, who can even the series up at 2 and make it a best of 3. We're going to get into a lot of football today as well. I've got a football-themed top 5 coming up at 2:45.
And it's interesting, Don, too, because when you mentioned the NBA Finals, you know, we talked so much about Game 3 being must-win for the Bucks, but I would argue that this Game 4 is the exact same thing, because the idea of looking so good in Game 3, if you were to then drop Game 4 at home and go back to Phoenix knowing they could close out, it's almost as bad as dropping Game 3.
Listen, it was over if they lost Game 3. I think it's over if they lose tonight. I don't think they're coming back from 3-1 down.
I'll go a step further. They win tonight, you can basically lock in a Game 7.
Yes, because I think Milwaukee will hold serve at home, and I didn't see anything to tell me that anything would be different in Game 5 than what you saw in Games 1 and 2. Although we both agreed, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on, that the road team stealing a game seems to be most favorable of the Bucks taking a Game 5. But now they have to win 2 games on the road. If they were to lose tonight, I think it would be over. So you've got that standpoint. I don't think the Suns are done if they lose tonight, because, again, they still are in a best of 3 with 2 games being in Phoenix.
But isn't it funny, though, that if they were to drop tonight and it goes to 2-2, that whole must-win idea really shifts back to Phoenix in Game 5.
Sure, because then it becomes the same thing with Milwaukee. They have to hold serve.
Right.
Because then the Bucks find themselves, if the Bucks were able to win Game 5, then they're going back to a place they never lose to wrap up the series.
Right, after winning 3 straight, so the momentum in the series completely changing.
And I think this series that is, you know, it's been kind of Dullsville for people that are not passionate basketball fans, but that would cease to be if the series is even at 2, because then forget about who's playing. It just becomes a classic series that could potentially go 7, and at that point, does it really matter who's playing? You're competing for a championship in a really great series. So that's going to be happening tonight on our air, and coverage will begin at 9 o'clock here after Dan Grosso on 98.7 ESPN New York. And we're going to have – we're going to go back to last one standing coming up later on. Instead of the Jeopardy, we're going to go to the traditional trivia coming up a little bit later on in the show.
I'm excited. Plus, you have a list today, I'm told.
Yes, I have a list that you're going to be completely, totally, 100% in on.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
And there's going to be pressure because when I threw it out to Andrew, he went 5 for 5.
Really?
Yeah. But I don't think you will, and that's not to say that you're deficient in the subject, is that you will be passionate about something being in there. I anticipate that. And I've got my 5 locked in, but there are many other potential picks that could be in that top 5. And that's coming up at 2:45. But we're going to start with the All-Star game, Peter, and there's a couple of different places to go. Andrew said this to me in the show meeting, and I agree with it. You kind of almost feel sorry for baseball because baseball has now become the easy target of everything that's wrong with sports. It doesn't seem like any decision they make, any move they make, is ever received well. And last night was no exception. The uniforms were universally panned for two reasons. One, I really enjoyed the one All-Star game that you were allowed to wear the uniform of the team that you represented. I thought that was cool. I like that. So there's that aspect of just going to uniforms at all. They could get panned, but I think there's room for negotiation there. I think that's kind of an old school opinion. I could see a fan that's younger saying, that's old school. That's my dad and my granddad's way. I want uniforms. But they weren't good. Peter, they were not good at all. I didn't see one person on social media or people that I talked to that wanted to represent the other point of view. Universally panned. So I don't know how you sit in a room, Peter, and say, I got this idea. We're going to go with uniforms. That's interesting because that really breaks from tradition. Yeah, but that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to win new fans over. Okay, what do you got? Oh, I love those. Let's go with those. Who did that? Like, how did anybody get together in a boardroom and say, yeah, that's it. That's what we want.
So I have mixed feelings on this.
Interesting.
Because I didn't care that much about the uniforms, and I could tell it was a subject of conversation. It wasn't one I really cared about. I did think the uniforms were ugly and not cool. You know, I'm a Jersey guy. So, and when I say that, I don't mean the state of New Jersey, though it's a fine state. I mean the uniform. If I see one that I like, it's like, oh, well, maybe I'd get the Ohtani All-Star jersey, or maybe I'd get a Judge All-Star jersey. Like, I like a cool All-Star jersey. It's also an opportunity, if you're a Yankee fan, for example, to get an authentic jersey of your favorite player with their name on the back.
Right.
Right? So it gives you that opportunity. And to your point, if they'd said, hey, we're going back to unis, and someone had come in and said, okay, cool, home team is going to be a white jersey. It was National League was home, right, because it was in Colorado.
Yes.
So it's going to be a white home jersey that says National in script across the jersey. And then the road jersey is going to be a gray jersey that says American in block letters across the jersey. Literally, Don, if they had done that in the most basic Oakland Athletic cursive for one and Red Sox block letter for the other, they would have been fine. You didn't have to do anything. Like, I don't think anyone would have said anything one way or the other. They would have been like, oh, cool, they went back to uniforms. Instead, they tried to get cute, and it was just universally panned.
Yeah, so baseball can't seem to get out of its own way sometimes because they're trying so desperately to get a younger audience, to be more hip. But remember, the people that are making the decisions aren't young and hip. So that's what's always kind of dangerous, right, is that, you know, the old school guys are the ones that are saying, let's change it up and let's do what the kids like to do, okay? Oh,
so what you're saying is it's giving you vibes of come to the place where the games are played. It's hip. It's cool. It's Noah's Arcade.
That's right. That's right. From Wayne's World. Absolutely. That's kind of the way that it feels. And I might be wrong about that. I probably am. They probably have focus groups, right? They probably bring in a bunch of people. They hire. They probably spend a ton of money. I remember just to tell you how much money it costs to do things like this, to just go through trying to find out what works and what doesn't work. And I was blown away by this. This is going back like over 10 years ago. The Jets, in their in-house entertainment on the Jumbotron, which is not really necessary in football because the game's enough for people, right? But they want to entertain during the commercial breaks and halftime. So on the Jumbotron, they had this like stick figure that was like a Jet fan and did like wacky things with videos and stuff. It was literally a stick figure. I don't know if any Jet fan remembers this. It's probably going back, probably even further back than 10 years ago. This is probably going back to like the really early, like 04, 05, all right? And I remember sitting there, this is stupid. It's a stick figure. And then somebody told me, oh, yeah, they did like focus groups, and it cost the Jets like $250,000 for the idea. And I'm like, oh, my God, you could get a five-year-old to do that for free. So that's the money they spent. I wouldn't be surprised if millions of dollars were spent investigating, polling, getting different different ideas and getting different people that did design the logo. It was not something that was throwing at a dartboard. They probably had tremendous effort and probably cost a fortune to come up with that. So I don't know who they polled. They didn't certainly poll any fans last night that voiced their opinion on it, but whatever. The other thing that I saw, and I don't know if you got this vibe, Peter, and this kind of ties into the whole thing with Stephen A, and he apologized for that. It's a shame Ohtani's got to talk with an interpreter because it's difficult to sell the sport when you've got the face of the sport that doesn't speak English. That whole thing, remember that old?
Oh, yeah, I remember it.
And we talked about it, and we're not going to dive too deep into it because I don't think Stephen meant anything by it, but this idea that we got to hear from the player, we got to mic the players, do the interviews, I think I'm good on that too. I think we overblow the whole we've got to get to know the player and talk to the player thing. It almost got in the way of the game to me last night. And again, the game wasn't overly entertaining, and it doesn't mean anything anyway. But I'm just wondering, Peter, especially with the way that the media is perceived, and we always hear fans say, I don't care that they don't talk to the media. And we always like, no, you got to have the players talk to the media because they're talking to you. You know, the byproduct of that, Peter, is that do the fans have an appetite to hear from these players? Or do they just want to see them play? Well, like, does it matter if they speak English? Does it matter how well-spoken they are? Does it matter if they say anything? Most of the time, they don't really say anything. They kind of toe the company line. And when they do go out there and say something outlandish or crazy, they get killed for it anyway.
Correct.
I'm just wondering how much people really care to hear from these players, or they just want to see them play.
Well, it's an interesting conversation because, you know, without going into all the depths of the Stephen A. thing, because it's very loaded, he's a friend of our show, it's our company, there's a lot there, and it's been talked about. I mean, he had Jeff Passan on his show, they had a lot of people on, right, and they really broke it down thoroughly. So without even going into the details of all of it, the one thing that stands out that showed that Stephen might have been coming at it from just the perspective of someone who hasn't been paying enough attention by fault of his own to Ohtani, is that Ohtani, for example, doesn't need to talk because of the way he jumps off the screen.
Right.
You know, like, you watched him yesterday. He is so charismatic that, like, people forget that charisma goes beyond words. The same way I was killing Pete Alonso yesterday for not being charismatic, right? And he speaks perfect English. Ohtani just jumps off the page. And, yeah, they talked to him through an interpreter. It was cool. It all worked out. But then later on, was it Nelson Cruz? Who were they? They were talking to someone late in the game. And, Don, they do the mic-up thing while the guy's going to bat. And it seems like it would be a great idea. Except it's not like the player cares about doing it. Like, they seem to care more about every conversation with the player they're walking by than talking to Joe Buck on the microphone. And it ends up just being, what are we doing here? What is the, you're right, what is the actual point?
Right.
And are we making way too much out of the players needing to communicate with the public?
See, that's the perfect way. I think fans do like when a player's mic'd up on the sidelines, like in the NFL. That's where we got the whole I'm seeing ghosts from Sam Darnold, right? I think fans love that because it feels like it puts them inside the game. So the players talking to each other, mic'ing up players, or later on after you edit all the nonsense out or swear words of having like a show where...
Well, you remember, I do a great impression of mic'd up, Don. Because sometimes it's great. Like, you get Sam Darnold saying, I'm seeing ghosts, and you have a story for a month. More often than not, it's, hey, we mic'd up so-and-so linebacker, and here's what we got. Whoa! Seven! Come around the back! You got to get him! Seven! Seven, seven, seven! All right! You got it! That was good stuff. Good stuff.
But that's inside the game where it's like, well, that's all we got.
Right.
So we got to air it because that's all they gave us. But every once in a while, you do get a gem. And sometimes, like after the fact, after you get to edit it and really hunt down, you might be able to get some really good stuff. Like on Hard Knocks, like after a preseason game, they can sift through all of the BS and then find some really juicy stuff that gets approved and is obviously kid-friendly. I think the fans love that. They eat that up because they want to feel like, what is it like to be a player and what are they talking about?
Well, there's a reason Hard Knocks is going on, what, 20 years?
Right. Is because I think people enjoy that. But then we misunderstand it, and then sports decides, well, what we're going to do is we're going to interview the coach like during the game. We're going to interview the manager during the game, which ends up being BS because it's not during the game. It's between innings. They make it seem like it's during the game, and the manager gives you another.
By the way,
and then talking to the head coach in the NHL on the bench,
or NBA between quarters.
Yeah, or where you get like maybe the only exciting thing you get is Popovich insulting whoever's interviewing him.
You know? By the way, do we know
that's
who,
the stuff I think fans do not have any interest in? So you're right. Like when they're talking to Brantley in the outfield and it's Joe Buck interviewing him, asking him, "Do you think you're going to get traded?" Like, he company line doesn't say it. That's the stuff you got to get rid of. This fat hands of we've got to get him interviewed. No, mic him up. That's great. But when you start doing the interviews, that's when you kind of lose me because that's not what people are talking about. So I would rather watch Ohtani play, or maybe the curiosity of how he interacts with his teammates that don't speak Japanese and all that, than rather doing an interview. Again, enough with the interview stuff.
I wish during a game, you know, they could mic up the dugout, and it's not on the whole game because that wouldn't be fair. But instead of doing an interview, they go by them and they say it's the start of the seventh inning. Guys, mics are live for this inning. Or not live. Mics are being recorded for this half inning or inning. So players know mics are on, and they're not going to say something insane. And frankly, it can be on the networks. Like in the case of Yes, they don't want to make the Yankees look terrible, so they're not going to air something terrible.
Of course.
But you'd love to get seeing Judge and Stanton sitting in the dugout together talking during Gardner's at bat. And that would be, you're right, that would be something compelling. The second we talk to them, the media, all things interesting just disappear. Do we know who's on Hard Knocks this year?
It's going to be the Cowboys.
Oh, God.
Because, listen, I think they want – I think that we're getting to the point now where the Giants might be the only team that hasn't done it.
Washington hasn't.
There's only like a handful of teams, but the Giants have no appetite to do it, and, you know, Jerry Jones loves that. But you know what? But we wanted to take some time today because we want to be interactive at 1-800-919-3776. You know, I give you my opinion. Peter gives you your opinion. But what do you like and what don't you like? Because all we have to go by is social media, and social media is inherently negative. Like, people aren't going to spend the time to tweet out something positive unless they're shilling for something, right? Most of the time, fans, they're gonna take the time to tweet probably something that they're passionate about and something negative. Like, I always argue with my wife. My wife will not make a purchase. Nancy will not make a purchase unless she goes and sees what she'll go online and she'll see what the reviews are on a product. And I tell her, well, listen, you got to take that with a grain of salt because most people are not going to take the time out of their busy day to go online, log on, and write a glowing review. Usually people are passionate about doing that when they're red hot about something and they're negative about something. You know, so I think the larger percentage of people that are going to be furious and frustrated with an object or a purchase and rip it online rather than have a glowing review.
Oh, 100%. And so, I love when you check out hotel reviews and you read like 10. What a great place to stay with my family. Had the best time. Come back here. You should come here. It's fantastic. Love the pool. Love the food. Next one. This place was literally torture. From the second we walked in, it's as if we were being held captive. I understand what Nancy's doing, but it's very hard for me to accept reviews.
Yeah. I mean, there's one commercial, I forget what it's for, where they're like, the reviews are, what are you asking me why I'm how I am? How dare you ask me how I am? Like, you're just trying to find something negative to say because the experience wasn't like the greatest experience you ever had in your life. So, but let's hear from you, 1-800-919-3776, because I do feel like baseball does get picked on a lot because baseball's old school. Baseball's the establishment, right? Of all the sports, as big as the NFL is and all that, baseball is the establishment, right? It's the furniture that came with the house. It's something that we all inherited because it's old school. It was the first, you know, big sport in this country, and it marks the time, as they say in the movies. And so sometimes that old school, you know, I think it's sometimes the best aspect of the sport, and sometimes it's the worst aspect of the sport.
Baseball stinks.
Because you don't want to sell your soul to win over a younger audience, because it you are what you are.
Bring back the old days.
Because I've seen it in NASCAR, as somebody that casually follows NASCAR, over the last 20 years, they have worked so hard to make the sport more popular, they lost their soul.
That's what it's all about.
So instead of getting the guy with a Winston hanging out of his mouth and a beer belly, which is what the sport was about, it's now become these guys with the Don Johnson beards and the mirrored sunglasses that are all Wall Street. Like, it's like they lost their soul. And I think that's why the sport isn't nearly as popular, because it's become very corporate, very new school. And that sport also is a very old school type of sport. So you don't want to lose your soul. But at the same time, you want to try to find the right group. And it just seems like whenever baseball tries to do that, it's George W. Bush back in the – or George – the George H.W. Bush back in the day during one of the debates against Bill Clinton in 92. I don't know if you remember this. I don't know if you can find it on YouTube. I remember seeing it live where he was trying – he was – and this is 92, okay? So this is a long time ago. It's 30 years ago for some people, but even this
– for everyone.
He was trying to like sound like he was in, he was like into, because you remember, you know, Bill Clinton was going on Arsenio and playing the sax.
Oh yeah, Bill Clinton was very cool.
Right, so Bush was trying to be cool, and the band that he referenced, and this is 92.
Okay, what did he reference?
Was Boy George, which is way off the mark today. It was off the mark in 92.
Trying too hard, bro.
That was so like 84.
Yeah, it was, and God bless him, but Boy George was a distant memory by 92.
But that's the old guy trying to sound cool. And you nailed it with the Wayne's World, with the rap, with Noah's Arcade. That's it. It's the old guy rapping, trying to relate to the kids.
Let me say one good thing for baseball.
Who's talking now?
Baseball, for all the flaws we may have, and listen, in some ways, maybe the Ohtani controversy. You know, like Stephen A. might have stumbled into doing a favor for baseball because it really took over the sports conversation this week, because that's how big and polarizing a figure Stephen A. is. In a week that was flanked by a controversial Euro final, or at least a very interesting final, Wimbledon final, the U.S. Olympic team lost two straight games, you have the NBA finals all around, Conor McGregor breaking his leg on Saturday. With all this stuff that's sort of around, you know, the NBA Finals going still much later than ever before, Don, I really feel that for the last 2 days, baseball was the main story in American sports, though.
Yeah.
The All-Star Week was successful in that regard.
And that's why I wish baseball would just wake up and realize it's always part of the conversation. It's just not number one anymore, and that's okay. Because it doesn't fall off the map. So it's always hanging around because there's so many people that do care about it.
God, but Don, doesn't it make you fantasize? You said it yesterday. Oh, this was Ohtani's biggest opportunity to showcase himself, was the All-Star game. And obviously, you know, yesterday, nothing special particularly happened. He pitched well. He was 0-for-2. He had a great first round, but he lost in the home run derby. Whatever. Man, I will say, if you could get Shohei Ohtani playing playoff games, I could see them being on the precipice of a big moment.
Yeah, and that's what they need. They need, because that's where all sports shine, right? Is
like
that
imagine
grand...
if somehow there was an Angels Yankees series, you know, something where everyone was dialed in to watch him in that spotlight on national TV. Yeah. That's what they need, and can't force those things. They just happen.
That has to happen naturally, right? I mean, people do think that strings are pulled in the commissioner's office, but, you know, clearly when you see some of the matchups, that's not the case. It just that has to happen naturally.
And they could go on a run. I mean, they're five and a half back in the wild card.
They're not that far out of it. They get Trout back. They certainly
– When is he supposed to be back?
I don't know exactly, but there is the hope that he could be back sometime in the second half of the season. The specific date, I'm not sure. But it could be in enough time where you get those two together and maybe they sneak in and do some damage. And what could be very, very wide open, because the best team in the American League right now seems to be the Red Sox, and they're a huge surprise. The two best teams in baseball are surprises, the Red Sox and the Giants. That was certainly outlined during last night's game. 1-800-919-3776, your thoughts on that. Big Top 5 coming up at 2:45. Last One Standing as well coming up later on in the show. It's Don and Peter on the K Show on Yes, at 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hey, everybody! It's me! I'm back! And guess what? It's another Don segment!
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don!
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie.
I don't know if you saw this, Peter, but there was an article today from CBS Sports. Isaac Bruce says he and Torrey Holt are NFL's best wide receiver duo of all time. So I thought, you know what? This would be a great top five. Top five NFL wide receiver duos of all time. And there's a bunch.
All right. Let me do
but
the
I'm really married to my top five.
All right. I mean, listen, it is going to be opinion and conjecture.
Well,
but let's
don't shy away from it. Don't fear it.
No, I'm leaning in. Let's start off with the first one I remember. I don't know if one part of it's enough for you, but well, should we start with the obvious, which is Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt?
Yes, we could do that if you'd like.
All right, so throw them out there.
And I have it at number five.
Okay, so we already talked about that.
Bruce in the Hall, Holt I think will. So I disagree that they're the best all time, according to Bruce. But I'm going to go with them at five. So I got four better.
How about Rice and Taylor?
Oh, Rice and Taylor, that's a good pull, Peter. You're going in descending order. I have that at four. Of course, Jerry Rice, maybe the greatest football player of all time. John Taylor had only one 1,000-yard season, but, of course, caught a game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. Excellent wide receiver. Not anywhere compared to Rice, but nobody is. But Rice puts it over the top and puts it in the top five and puts it at four.
Moss and Carter.
Another good pull, Peter. And I've got it at number one.
There you go.
Of course, they were on that 98 team, which was the greatest offense of all time and probably would be acknowledged a little bit more if a field goal was kicked in the championship game.
Ugh.
But they were amazing together, and they really made it go, right? Because it wasn't – listen, the quarterback was great, whether it was Moon or whether it was Cunningham, but it was really about those two. And I've got it at number one. You disagree with that?
No, I have no issue with it. I mean, you know, it was obviously a brand new Moss and Carter fading, but they were incredible.
So you're 3 for 3. Now, remember, there's pressure because Andrew went 5 for 5, but you're 3 for 3. You're in there. You're in the conversation.
But this is where it gets to me. This is where it starts to get sticky. Does anyone appear twice on this list?
No.
How about Duper and Clayton?
Duper and Clayton, that is an excellent pull, Peter. But I do not have them in the top five.
Oh!
Now, we're going to play the who you taking out. You're obviously not
who
taking,
taking
out any of the three that you picked. So we'll see if there's debate once I give you the other two. Duper and Clayton were fabulous, but I think they really were a byproduct of who was throwing them the football, and that was Dan Marino. But Duper and Clayton, because it flows off the tongue and it's the first thing you think of, but after much debate, I have them on the outside. Streak is over, but still outstanding poll.
Well, so I'm suffice it to say, you're not going to have one that I, of course, would want to have.
Sure. That's where I thought the streak would end for you.
Yeah, I of course, would throw out Monk and Clark.
Who are you taking out? I don't have them in the top five. You could have went with if I went with Trio.
Now they're in the posse's in the conversation.
Right. But listen, Monk's a Hall of Famer, but I don't put him at the level of some of the guys that we're talking about here. I like it, but I got it on the top five. But I thought you would push hard for that to be in the top five.
No, because Clark, if it was Monk and someone else a little closer, you know, Clark's run was shorter. Monk was equally good, like the entire, all three Super Bowls. But that's not true of Clark. All right, this is hard for me. I'd like a hint. I'd like either an era.
One is fairly recent, like within the last... You know, I think one of them retired in 08, but they were, you know, early 2000s dominant. One's in the Hall, one I think is going to the Hall, and the other, both are in the Hall of Fame, a little bit more old school. Like 70s, old school.
An AFC team?
Oh, these are both AFC teams, brother.
Both AFC teams.
Oh, sure.
One you said retired in 08 ish.
Yes.
Ish. Who was the other person with Lance Allworth in San Diego?
No, I'm not going back that far. If I was going to go San Diego, I was going to go Jefferson Lofton, but I have them on the outside. Not Jefferson Lofton, I'm sorry. That would be Green Bay. Jefferson and Lofton, but I have them on the outside.
And actually the Buffalo wide receivers, which would have been before that, could have been interesting too, speaking of Lofton.
You could have went Lofton Reed. That's debatable.
Lofton
Reed have them in the top 5 because Lofton was there for a while, but he was at the end of his career, but that's certainly debatable. Jefferson Winslow, if I was going to go tight end wide receiver in San Diego, but I did not go there. I was going wide receivers. But the Buffalo one's intriguing, but we can debate that once we've got the other two and then who you're taking out. This one, I'm surprised you didn't get. You should be able to get both of these. You're going to go, oh, yeah, for both. Who are you taking out?
Indianapolis.
Yeah,
Harrison Wayne.
That's right. Harrison Wayne. I have them at 2. So now we're just looking for 3. 70s. Hall of Fame quarterback. Throwing to 2 Hall of Fame wide receivers.
Lynn Swann.
That's right.
Swann and Stallworth.
There you go. Swann and Stallworth at number 3. So the top 5 wide receiver duos, I've got the Rams, Bruce and Holt at 5, the 49ers, Rice and Taylor at 4, Swann and Stallworth with the Steelers 3, Harrison and Wayne for the Colts 2, Moss and Carter with Minnesota at 1. So are you taking any of those out for the posse? Are you taking any of those out for Duper and Clayton?
Listen, I know the numbers. Swann and Stallworth are both Hall of Famers. I have no experience watching them play, right? So
right.
That's tough.
That's understood. Their last Super Bowl together was the year of your birth.
Right. So that's tough for me to – but no, the posse, the two in the posse are not doing that. And Reed and Lofton not – and, excuse me, Duper and Clayton not either, to be honest. I mean
– no. And other ones that I thought of too, you might – it was very brief, but you could go Randy Moss – and in New England with Welker. So you can go Moss Welker if you want there. They were part of the perfect season, but you know, not didn't spend a ton of time together. Also, Cowboy fans can say, what about Irvin and Harper? Also could be debated as well. There were quite a few that I thought of.
Harper's not that special.
Well, he was as special as Taylor, but I've just got Rice way better than Michael Irvin, even though he's in the Hall of Fame too. What did Harper do before he went to Tampa? That's a good question.
I'll tell you.
Because Taylor only had 1,000-yard season, but again, he did have a touchdown in the Super Bowl. A game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. Do you have Harper stuff there?
Harper stuff in Dallas?
All right.
Why is this not the full stats?
He never had a 1,000-yard season, okay? He only was in Dallas for 4 years.
Yeah, it's not much here. It's actually
And his best year was he had 821 yards receiving in 94 and 8 touchdowns. So I'm comfortable to say Taylor was a better wide receiver than Harper. So, but those are the ones that I thought of because I did put a lot of thought into it.
You know what, Don? I got to tell you, I'm putting my bias aside here because I agree that Clark was enough. Go pull up Gary Clark's stats. That's a lot more for longer than I was giving him credit for. Pull that up, Don, and tell me if it makes you rethink a little bit when you think about the fact there's two Super Bowls and look at Gary Clark's stats. And we all know that Monk's an easy one, right?
Although tell his stats probably don't jump out the way the others do because of the era.
Who? Which one?
Even Monk stats. Yeah, but you're right. He had 5,000-yard seasons and won his last year in Washington. He had 912, had a 10-touchdown season in 91.
Clark made it a little more interesting than you would have thought there. You know, I mean, in 1984, of course, Monk had 106 receptions. And he was basically every year just consistently, 1,300, 1,200, 1,000. Then he was hurt. Then he had 950, 1,200, another 1,000-yard. I mean, Monk, but no, that's fair, Don. I think that's a fantastic list. I have no argument.
Yeah, I'm just who you taking out, but I knew you could debate that. But that's good. I mean, obviously, five would be the one you would take out. That's the easy one.
Now, what's the best? And when we come back, I want you to think about Don. Who's the best New York receiver duo of all time? How about that?
That's a good one.
Because wide receivers don't. I mean, we've had in recent years. There's been some better ones, but this isn't like the most high-potent offense town in history.
No, it's kind of for their defense. But, yeah, we'll talk about that. A lot of baseball on the table. We've also got a last one standing coming up as well. It's Don and Peter on the K-Show on YES at 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Now the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. I think Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Don and Peter take you till 6:30. Then it's Grasso up until game four of the NBA Finals. We'll get into that a little bit later on. Last one standing coming up as well. More of your calls on the All-Star game last night at 1-800-919-3776. But Peter, you threw out what would be local if we were to go with best wide receiver duos.
That's right.
And these are the ones that popped into my head during the break.
Okay.
A lot of Jets, all right? Keyshawn and Krabet.
Yeah, that's where I figured you'd go.
Coles and Moss.
You know what? Sneaky, fun duo that was.
Walker and Toon.
I was wondering who the pair to Al Toon would be.
Wesley Walker.
Yeah.
So those are the three Jets that I thought of. Then you go Giants, a little tougher, because in their championship years in 86 and 90, not really. You know, you're not McConkie and Johnson. You're not going to go, 90 with any of the wide receivers there, Stephen Baker and whoever, because it was always very tight end driven, very running back driven, very defensive. But when you go to the more recent championships, you can go Nixon Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
You can also, if you go back to 07, it was very brief, but Toomer and Burris.
Yep.
So that would probably be the five right there. Am I missing anybody?
No, he couldn't be. Those are clearly the names that people remember when they think of receivers in this town.
Yeah, I think so.
Was there not Toomer and Nix?
No. No. When is Hakeem Nix rookie
year? I mean, hold on. What about Beckham and Shepard?
Again, very brief. Very brief.
Very brief, but Beckham's so good.
But I mean, I don't think I'm taking anybody out of that.
Who are you taking out?
Greek chimed in. He's a big Giant fan. But he goes Sauer and Maynard. That's a good one. I think that's where Ira in Staten Island was going to go. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Ira?
Hey, what's happening, boys? How are you?
Now, Sauer and Maynard, does that eclipse any of the three that I had it for the Jets?
In my eyes, yeah, because I saw them play, and you know they were pretty prolific. You know, especially you know the way the game was played back then. I mean, Walker and Toon, you know, they both got banged up a lot. Coles and Moss, I get it. But you were talking about, you know, all-time receiver in New York. I mean, I'm going to throw Frank Gifford in the conversation, but he was a hybrid player because, you know, John, it's before my time. But I think he played running back. He played different positions. But I guess you have to put Don Maynard as the number one receiver coming between the Jets and the Giants all time.
Yeah, and ironically, the Giants had him, right, Ai?
Unbelievable.
Giants
amazing.
Drafted
him. They let him walk.
Look at George Sauer's. Listen, this is why we have Ira, and that's why we have Greek. Sauer had three consecutive 1,000-yard receiving years, 66, 67, and 68. In an era where, you know, getting 1,000 yards receiving in a 14-game schedule, even in the AFL, that was pretty good. He actually led the league in 67 with 75 catches. So, you know, Sauer Maynard probably over Moss and Cole. But maybe it's top. Is it better than Corbett and Keyshawn?
Yeah, I do, because I think if you look at the average, I know the game is a different game, but if you look at average yards per catch, I without looking it up, I would say Maynard and Sauer were higher than any of the other Jets or Giants.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's good. A heck of a quarterback throwing to him. Probably better than any, obviously better than, you know, Chad Pennington, and certainly better than Ken O'Brien, but good stuff. That was a good contribution. So that was just off the top of our head.
A lot of people throwing out Decker and Marshall.
Brief again, but still good. I don't know if I have Decker up there among, but he had some good seasons with the Jets.
Yeah, but he's the name I wouldn't have thought of. And it was,
I don't
great.
Know if I'm taking any of the guys that we just mentioned out, but that's pretty good. That's not bad for on the fly. I love now, when Peter and I start hooking up with football. This is good stuff.
Now, you know what? A really, really good point from Darren Levine on Twitter, Don.
Okay.
As to why Monk and Clark deserve in. All different quarterbacks.
Yeah, because Gibbs won three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks.
Who did? Now, when your list on how many of them were dominant with different quarterbacks?
None of them. Right? Because St. Louis was all Warner.
Yeah.
49ers, it would have been, well, it's
Montana into Young.
Taylor might have been gone by the time Young took over. Yeah, the Vikings, right? Because you had Moon, you had Cunningham.
But their year of dominance was all Cunningham.
Yeah. But I would have to, I don't know, if I'd have to look up and see. It's mostly Cunningham. Well, that's good. No, I think that's the only one that you could debate. Now, Fred in the Bronx wants to debate some older school guys. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Fred?
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
What's up?
And I didn't hear it. Maybe it came up. I didn't hear Cliff Branch and Freddie Biletnikoff even in the conversation.
I had it written down. I didn't mention it. That's old school, too, and that's in the conversation. Who would you take out then?
Tremendous classic speedster with the possession guy, best of all time. Who's number five on your list?
Bruce and Holt.
It's tough to bounce anybody, but at least in the conversation. And if you want to go by, like, all of these conversations you're talking about, you can only compare them to the people in their era. And did they dominate their era? Well, the Rams won a championship in 51 with Tom Fears and Elroy Hirsch. Mm-hmm. Tremendous duo.
That's awesome.
Tremendous. Look up the numbers.
No, I'm sure. Well, so I didn't get caught up in the numbers, Fred, just because I know that it's really difficult for some of those numbers to translate over time.
I mean, compared to their era.
Because Moss and Carter's numbers are going to dwarf everybody. But even Bruce and Holt's numbers are probably not comparable to some of them, because I don't even know if Warner threw for 4,000 yards during those seasons. They were considered the greatest show on turf. That's only 20 years ago.
New York, did Homer Jones' name come up yet as far as the greatest receiver in New York?
Yeah, it wasn't a great Giants era, but he should. You know, I don't know who you team him up with for a duo.
I don't remember who his opposite was. Yeah.
Well, you know, Homer Jones you're talking late 60s, early 70s was probably the greatest wide receiver the Giants ever had.
I think so.
Now, I just don't know who you tie him into as far as the duo is concerned. But I love the old school conversation, too.
Wow, Marshall and Decker for 1 year, man. This was 2015. Marshall had 109 catches, 1,500 yards, and 14 touchdowns.
Yeah.
And Decker had 80 catches, 1,027 yards, and 12 touchdowns.
But it was probably too brief to be on the list, even our list. But still, and that's what I think Tyler in Staten Island's going to say. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Tyler?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Just want to make say one thing before I get to my point. My friend Anthony is the one who really got me into the show. Love you guys. We call him Big Tone. He's not one to call in, but I know he's listening.
Okay, cool.
Definitely wanted to add to the conversation. I think Decker Marshall should get a little bit more consideration, because if Moss and Carter is number one on your list, Don, they broke their records for touchdowns by a duo. I mean, I know it was brief, but still, they deserve. I think they deserve to be on that list a little bit more consideration. Thanks again, guys. Love the show.
Well, which list are you talking? My top five or the local one? Yeah, I'm not putting him in the overall top five. It was way too brief, but it was a monster season. But they gave you a little bit more longevity than any of the ones that we're talking about here. Let's go to, because this is really catching fire. I love this. Let's go to Lewis in Queens.
People love
football. ESPN New York. What's
people
up?
People love football.
They certainly do.
Football.
What's up, Lewis?
Hey, what's going on, Don and Peter? How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm good, good. First of all, long-time listener. Love the show. I've been listening to you guys for years. I've listened to you guys going to school to the city and back to Long Island. So, my tandem that I don't think they'll make the list, but some consideration, I think, would be Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin.
That's good.
Fitzgerald, obviously, one of the greatest receivers of all time. Anquan Boldin, one of the toughest receivers of all time. That man took so many shots up across the middle, with quarterbacks like Kurt Warner. They made the Super Bowl together. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald might have one of the greatest catches of all time in the Super Bowl history. Big Ben.
How about the combo that Larry Fitzgerald has right now, too?
Ooh.
We don't know how long it'll last, but that's something.
If you would put Fitzgerald maybe 5 years ago with Nuke, then I think you have a real conversation there. But I think Larry today is a little past his prime for that one.
That is fair.
I'm such a fan of his, though. One of the reasons I'm rooting for the Suns, to be honest with you.
Wow, what an interesting way to get there.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones. I enjoyed this list because I think I could feel comfortable about my top five. But there are a bunch, and you're right, Boldin played from 03 to 09 in Arizona, and he had, in that span of time, 5,000-yard seasons. I don't have him in the top five, but it's close.
Why?
Now, what was Larry putting up early?
I think Larry got after it pretty quick.
Yeah, because his first year was 04, so it was a year after Boldin. So they were together. So
Larry, 780 the first year, 1,400 the second year, 950 the third year, 1,400 the fourth year, 1,400 the fifth year.
God, six of his first 8 years, he had over 1,000 yards receiving. And then the 2 years he didn't, his rookie year, 780, and in his third year, 946. So he came up 54 yards shy, Peter, of having seven consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. And also led in touchdowns in 08 and 09 with 12 and 13. That's a heck of a duo. Now, they don't get a lot of consideration because they didn't win. But, you know, neither did Moss or Carter. Well, I don't know how much of it was their fault, but still, all the other ones have championships with the exception of Minnesota, and they went to a championship game.
How wacky and not good is this Richard Sherman story that came out today?
I know. I was going to mention it when you just randomly brought up Richard Sherman, for interviews, but no, that's not good. Domestic violence and battery.
But it's also just a strange
burglary
story. He was booked at 6 a.m. in Seattle. He's being investigated for burglary, domestic violence. Records show he was denied bail, but that's supposedly standard procedure. Their police are also investigating him for a separate incident that happened an hour earlier, connected to a hit and run. There was a 911 call received from the residence at 2 a.m., The person calling said that an adult male family member who did not live at the residence was attempting to force his way into the home. Mm. And the police arrived, reportedly found him outside the home, and he fought with police, but was eventually apprehended. Here's an update from Adam Schefter. Richard Sherman's wife, Ashley Moss, told the Seattle Times he didn't harm anybody. My kids were not harmed in the incident. He's a good person, and this is not his character. We're doing all right, just trying to get him out. I want people to know no one was injured.
Okay. Now, this is obviously big news because of the stature of the player, but also from a local tie-in, you know, a lot of rumors that he wanted to play for the Jets because of Robert Saleh, and that was he going to end up in New York, and does this stop that from happening? Obviously,
he is a free agent,
plays
right?
out. But he's a free agent. Do you not sign him if you're the Jets? I mean, you probably have to do your due diligence to see where this goes, but I don't know how close the Jets were to signing him, but does that stop that from happening? Don't know. But it doesn't look good, but we're going to have to wait and see how it plays itself out. But, you know, that did come down earlier this morning, and we'll see how it plays out over the next probably couple of months. These things are usually slow to find out information. So I'm sure the NFL will also do an investigation, Peter, because that's the other aspect from a Jet standpoint, or really anybody that wants to sign him. Even if he's not convicted of these charges, there could still be enough to suspend him. If the NFL does an investigation because it's domestic violence, he could be facing a 4-game suspension just for the involvement in this. So
right. Who knows?
We'll keep an eye on all of that. Lot going on a little bit later on in the hour. We're going to do Last One Standing. You never know when football is going to creep in and how much it's going to dominate. On the K-Show on Yes and 98.7 ESPN New York.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. Today, two random opponents enter.
You ever had 11 women and 40 hot dogs at the same time?
And only one makes it out.
Dream Portal.
Who will advance in this tournament to nowhere? We find out in the latest edition of Last One Standing.
That's right, it's back. Andrew Gundling here for Last One Standing. Don versus Peter in today's edition. Guys, I feel like it's been a while since we've done Last One Standing. We almost need a refresher course.
By the way, you're not wrong.
So the way it works is I will rotate first. I guess, who wants to go first here? I don't have a coin to flip.
Well, Peter can go first.
Peter will go first. So we'll ask Peter a question, a trivia question that I have selected, and then Don. And we'll go back and forth basically until someone has gotten one and the other person hasn't. So if Peter gets his right and then Don gets his wrong, it's over, or vice versa.
Okay.
All right. I have four questions here for each of you. So if we get through all four and you've gotten all of them, or you're tied at the end of it, then I do have one Who Am I to break the tie.
Which I'm terrific at.
You each have one Ask Anthony if you need some help. And I believe you each have one Phone a Friend as well. You'll just call somebody directly on your cell phone.
Right. Thanks for reminding me that. I forgot about that. Yep. That was a fun part.
And put it up to the mic and away we go. All right. Are we ready?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Wait,
Peter?
I do have a phone. Phone. All right. I'll figure it out. Okay.
Oh, because you're...
Yeah, it's okay. I'll make it work. I'll FaceTime someone. I got it.
Okay. All right, Peter. Here we go. Your first question. LeBron James appeared in what 2015 Amy Schumer comedy?
I mean, I know the movie. What the hell was the name of it? I cannot remember, and I will have to ask Anthony, who I think will remember.
Well, listen, if there's anybody that thought I was RJ, they're wrong. I also don't remember the name of the movie, because I've seen the movie, but I don't remember the name of the movie.
So you want to end it here and go to calls?
Well, Don can steal for the win, right?
Isn't right.
Can I also use my phone a friend on the same thing here?
Yeah, I guess you can.
All right, no problem.
Ballard! Because I'd hate to see this end right away. It's a movie that I will never see, but I know the answer.
All right.
So a lot of pressure on you.
Calling my friend Jeff, a.k.a. huge movie nerd. It's just a matter of answering. Come on, Jeff, please answer.
I'll tell you what, Don, it's a very funny movie.
I liked it.
You might want to move off of your stance of refusing to ever see
Never.
It. It's genuinely...
Nope.
And your only reason for not wanting to see it is because LeBron is in it?
That's right.
I'm
good.
So you're not going to see Space Jam?
No, I've said that on record. And that's just more in protest of just doing it. Because I think the original, you don't touch it. So I don't know if this is a remake or a sequel. I don't care. I'm not going.
This is not appearing to be an answer, guys. I'll give him another 5 seconds and then. Oh, he answered. Hold on, I have him on the line. Jeff, I need you. I cannot remember the name of the 2015 film starring Amy Schumer that LeBron James was in.
With Bill Hader.
That's right. The Bill Hader vehicle.
Train wreck.
Train wreck. Final answer.
That is correct.
Thank you, Jeff. Jeff Greenblatt, huge movie nerd, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Wow.
I think it's safe to say if I happen to lose today, I'm not going to really feel as bad as Peter should right now.
Well, but that's such an easy one. I just couldn't remember. I knew it was like a generic Judd Apatow name. It was a good movie, though. I enjoyed it.
It was. So Peter is now out of both his Ask Anthony and Phone a Friend after one question. We go to Don now. All right, Don, your first question. The Giants have won 4 Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
Where were they? I just need the city, not the name of the stadium.
Okay, so the first one was in Pasadena, California. The second one was in Tampa, Florida. The third one was in Phoenix, Arizona. And the fourth one was in Indianapolis, Indiana.
So that, I think, is correct. Here's the only area where there might be a gray area. Do we give him Phoenix? Technically, I think it's Glendale.
Oh, that's true.
Because wait, how many
did you
ask for?
University of Phoenix. All right, you know what? Don't give it to me. Peter wins. We move on.
Oh, no. What? Oh, wait, how many did you ask him for?
4.
He needed to name all of them?
But I said Phoenix instead of Tempe because it was the University of Phoenix.
I'd like Don to get that, please.
Okay, well, all right. Phoenix, I suppose, is the nearest major city, so...
Tempe's not even a real place.
Well, I think it's now Glendale. Tempe is where their old stadium was. I think
it's Glendale.
Glendale is where the stadium is now.
Don and I like that we are now in the Neil Lomax Phoenix Cardinals days. That's where Don and I are in Tempe.
All right. We'll give Don that, and the game will continue. All right, Peter, here's your second question. The 1992 USA basketball team, the Dream Team.
I remember it well.
Who did they beat in the gold medal game?
Oh.
Don remembers that too?
No. You're safe.
Spain.
That's incorrect. Don, do you want to steal?
No.
Okay. The answer was Croatia.
Croatia. Yeah. God, I watched all those games too.
All right. Drazen Petrovic, Tony Kukoc, were both on that team, I believe.
Larry Legend was number 7. Jordan, of course, was 9. I think Ewan was 6. Stockton was 12, of course.
All right. Well, this is Don for the win now. Here we go. Let's see. Which one do we want to go with? All right, we'll go with this. In the 1990s, the Braves were known for their legendary pitching staff. We all remember Maddox, Glavin, and Smoltz, but who was their other starter who in 7 years with the team had a record of 72-62 and a 3.83 ERA?
I want to say it's not – I always forget his first name because I think of Sean Avery, but it was Avery. Is that enough for me to be able to get it right?
So I believe in the past we've addressed this, and I think we have said that last names suffice as enough of an answer.
It's up to you. It's not up to me to judge.
I'm willing to give it to Don. I'm going to say that's the correct answer.
Excuse me?
Was it Steve Avery?
That's right. It is Steve Avery. That is correct. You know why? Don is our winner for last one standing.
You know why I want you to have it, Don?
I win!
Because I feel like I remember every player on that team, and I do not remember Steve Avery. So you deserve that. I don't know how I don't remember him.
No?
Good player.
Yeah, I just don't. He just doesn't stick out in my brain at all. If we were to go over that entire roster, and I'm talking about from Otis Nixon to Ron Gant to Blauser. The entire team I remember. I do not remember Avery.
Otis Nixon had he looked like
he was 100 years old.
7 years old when
he was
100
at that time.
And who was the and then there was
Terry Pendleton.
Charlie Liebrand. Mm-hmm. Was also in that rotation.
I do not remember him either.
I don't know if he was there for all of the run, but definitely that night he was on that 91 team. I'm pretty sure. But that was fun.
Don, a great performance by you. You were perfect. Thank you, Jeff. You saved me.
And who
that was
Jeff?
Almost – Jeff is so good at movie trivia, I'm not kidding, that was almost one of those moments where someone just absolutely, forgets how to throw the ball from second to first base.
Yeah, you almost – it was –
it was almost too easy for him. Like, how could he possibly get
that
wrong? He
almost Chuck Knobloch didn't.
He almost Knobloch.
His mom.
Yeah. I love today's show, by the way. NFL receivers – some movie trivia. This is the show to me. This is the show.
You're right. This is the show. I was telling Peter off the air just that when we all of a sudden just get into random football, we get in trouble, but it's fun. Do you remember when
this
we were back
football.
At the studio a couple of years ago? Had to be obviously a couple of years ago. It was our second summer in from home.
Football.
Yes.
The NFL Network was replaying a game. And we were breaking it down like it was live.
See, I could do that with football. Football's the only game, not the only, but it's the most likely game where when you talk about it in any way, the phone lines will light up for whatever that topic is.
We've got grades on the Mets and the Yankees, and I'm going to kind of take exception to both. It's Don and Peter on the K Show on Yes and 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Fun show. Always a very interesting 3 days, Peter. Around the All-Star break and what's going on, but it's been different. It's been fun. Michael's never had to do it in the history of this show, by the way, which tomorrow will be the 19th anniversary of the K-Show, that he's ever had to work these 3 days because he always took them off in the summer because the Yankees are off. But it has been less challenging because it's fun working with you. And then the Alonzo stuff carried yesterday.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Today has been great with the football. And you know, Andrew made a great point off the air. He's like, we also have the NBA Finals going on, but I'm not really sure that that's been anything that's carried the last two-plus days for us. A little bit, but we've had a lot of fun talking about all the other things. So cheers to you, buddy.
I've really enjoyed this week, Tom. More than most. Like, it's not always like this every single time we have this situation. Sometimes it feels so dead. But, I mean, listen, we luck out. The NBA's late, right? The NBA's late. Otani provides a really good all-star story that generally, I mean, let's be honest. Baseball's been so boring star-wise. And especially in a year in which we lose DeGrom for the all-star game, which would have given us more to do. We got lucky with Otani and him just being there in his presence. It's been a fun week.
And listen, you know, it sounds like, and we had a caller earlier in the show, Mike, that, you know, says I'm picking on baseball and why am I hating on all the things that are happening. Listen, I thought the jerseys were an awful idea, and I thought they also looked terrible. But the juice of the All-Star game is going to be lost because we live in a different world now. You know, when we were kids, Peter, we needed the All-Star game to see some of these players, because all we could do was watch our local team. Now, in New York, we were always in good shape because we had both the Mets and the Yankees. So, as a Met fan, I still watched Yankee games, so I got to see George Brett and Rod Carew. And Yankee fans, you know, had a chance to turn on a Met game and see, you know, Steve Garvey and Ron Say and, you know, whatever great players were in the National League who they normally wouldn't get a chance to see, or West Coast guys they wouldn't get a chance to see. But listen, if you're a baseball fan, you have the Sunday, you have the, not the Sunday ticket, the baseball package, or, you know, ESPN's done a great job. They've had Sunday Night Baseball now for 30 years. That if you really want to see Ohtani, you could find him. They might be late, but you can find him. Plus, yep. You've got the app. You could see all the highlights and home runs. You don't have to wait for the 11 o'clock news report to show you a highlight. So we just live in a world where access is right at our fingertips. We don't need the All-Star game to see these things. So, of course, it's not going to have the cachet that it was when we were kids. You just got to live with that. You know, times change. MTV doesn't show videos anymore. You know, ESPN doesn't have SportsCenter the way they used to with all the highlights and all that, because they realize you got to change, you got to adjust. So, and there's only so much adjusting you can do. That's what I'm saying about baseball, Peter. You know, Manfred is making all these changes. You know, the 7-inning doubleheaders and a runner at second base in extra innings, and, you know, coming up with wacky uniforms, different ideas. Sometimes it just is what it is. This is what your sport is. And it's not your fault that you're not number one anymore, but you're still relevant. Baseball's still relevant, still talked about, it's still cared about. I just think that baseball fans are sensitive to that it's not number one anymore. It's probably not our national pastime anymore. Football is. But there's a lot of reasons for that, Peter. We live in a very short attention span world where 16 games is always going to be better than 162.
And 17 games.
Right, well, yeah. See, I got to get out of it.
It's done. It's going to be all year. It's going to be all year.
Until
8-8, 7-9, we're never going to stop.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult.
But you're right. But it will help. You know, it will help getting these stars that really impact. I mean, listen, that's... If we're being really honest with ourselves, isn't that part of the disappointment of Judge over the last few years? And again, I'm not blaming this on him. I'm not blaming it on his effort level. I'm not even really blaming it on his play. But Judge being off the field as much as he's been has hurt baseball. The having a big home run bashing star on the Yankees helps the game. And Judge has not been what it looked like he was going to be. Then they get Stanton, and Stanton wasn't what he was in Miami. So there have not been any breaks when it comes to stars, because we know that Trout is special, but between his personality and Anaheim, he hasn't been a star. And then you see someone like Shohei Ohtani, and there's a glimmer. You're like, oh, wait a second. And Don, I think there's a similarity, too, between Judge and Ohtani, though I do think Ohtani's more charismatic. I do think he jumps out at you much more. He's a much, much bigger smile and regular smile, etc. But, Don, there's something in baseball about that 6'5 dude who just mashes. There really is.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's not a sport where height matters at all, which is maybe why it stands out even more. It's not exciting to have a big guy in basketball, but when you have a huge guy in baseball who can really crush the ball, and of course Ohtani throws 100 miles an hour, maybe, just maybe, we're at the beginning of something.
And he'd be on a team that you either love or hate. Nobody's neutral on the Yankees. The Angels, nobody has an opinion on the Angels. You know, so that helps, you know, judge. But listen, Ohtani also pitches. Like, so he is so unique. And when we talk about charisma, it's not so much talking in the interview, what you have to say, or having some kind of political view. It's just watching them. Some guys pop when they watch. And it doesn't mean they're not great. Because I'll give you a hockey example, the one that you can certainly relate to, Peter. Because hockey kind of goes through the same thing, too. Sidney Crosby versus Alexander Ovechkin. Now, Sidney Crosby's got the rings, and Sidney Crosby's the better all-around player. But the guy that I probably would rather watch is Ovechkin because of the way he plays the game. Throws his body into the boards after a goal. Looks like he's having fun. Sidney Crosby, and I had Phil Bork tell me this, who does the color on radio for the Pittsburgh Penguins. He was a former Penguin. You probably remember him.
Of course.
Sidney Crosby's a lot like Derek Jeter. You know, Sidney doesn't give you much, but he's so good. But the way they play the game, you know, Ovechkin's, I think, a little bit more enjoyable to watch. Now, you may disagree because you're a Penguins fan, but, you know, knowing both of those players, don't you find that just being neutral, that Ovechkin seems to have a little bit more kind of a joy for the game, which maybe grabs a few eyeballs than just how professional Crosby goes about things?
Well, it's two things. So Sid is magic, you know, but in some ways you have to know hockey a little bit to appreciate all the ways in which Sid is magic. Ovechkin is like, first of all, the energy with which he plays, his style as a person, like even when they won the Stanley Cup, how he carried himself. And then Don, he's like a dude in baseball who just mashes the ball. That's the kind of hockey player is, right?
Yeah.
It's goals, 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 goals,
goals.
Oh,
yeah, and that's what people are going to relate to, not how many assists you have, but the goals that you score. And I'll give you a football one. Different type of players, but they played the same position. Darrell Revis and Deion Sanders.
Oh, 100%.
Now, you know, Darrell Revis had personality, but he just shut you down. You know, but Deion did it with a little bit of a flair, right? He'd
high-step
into the end zone. Had nothing to do with post-game interviews or commercials or the fact that Deion even played baseball. It was just that Deion kind of did it in a flashier way, which kind of captivated you, where Revis kind of just went about his business. Revis was a better corner than Deion because they didn't even throw Revis's way. At least Deion gave you a little bit where you threw where he could pick you off.
Well, I mean, Champ Bailey was better than Deion. The only conversation about Champ Bailey's had in Denver. And someone in Washington. You know, he wasn't a star. I mean, was that controversial to say that? I'm pretty sure Champ was better than Deion.
In football circles, he was tremendous. But you're right. I mean, like,
he wasn't
Deion
a star.
Off the screen. And that's what we were talking about. We can get into being able to do interviews and how you can market certain players. The fact is that we fall in love with sports because of how they play the game and how well they play the game. There is not one... Again, I'm going to overstep my bounds because I'm not a hip-hop guy, so I'll use the rock and roll analogy, and you can go hip-hop. There's not one band that I loved in rock and roll or metal based on what they did off the stage. I fell in love with the music. I fell in love with the stage presence. I didn't fall in love with their interviews or their political beliefs or different things they did away from the stage. I cared about the music. It didn't even matter what they looked like. Half the time in the 70s, you'd buy an album, they wouldn't even have a picture of the band on the cover. You know, and usually the bands that had to sell themselves away from the stage weren't very good. Let's face it. I love Kiss, but Kiss is popular because of the makeup and all the things they did to compensate for really not being as great musically as Zeppelin and The Who and those bands, right? So they kind of marketed themselves, and that made them great.
But I don't think anybody would have any of those four members of KISS as the, you know, Gene Simmons is not the greatest bass player in the world. Paul Stanley wasn't the greatest guitar player in the world. They did that. But the bands that were great, did anybody care what Metallica looked like? Or what they did? Oh, you love the music. It's the same thing in sports. We fall in love with what you do on the field, the ice, or the court. That's why it doesn't matter that Ohtani doesn't speak English. Would it help? Yeah, I guess. But when you're that good and that good-looking and that charismatic on the field and you sign every autograph that anybody asks for and you play the game with passion and excitement, shouldn't that be more than enough?
And you have and you hit 33 home runs with, what, an ERA of 2?
Right, so does it matter where you're from? Does it matter what you speak? Again, I'd love to be able to interview the guy, but really, is that, you know, is there anybody that's going to watch Ohtani play? See how great he is as a pitcher and a hitter, how good-looking he is, as charismatic as he is, and say, I didn't fall in love with him until you did that, you know, walk-off interview him after the game. No. Again, those things have their place, and they are important. I think players do need to speak to be able to tell you what's going on with the game, why certain things happen, so that stories can be written and post-games can be done. But at the end of the day, let's not lose focus on why we love this in the first place. Is because we love watching these guys play. And there has not been one player that anybody has fallen in love with that the number one reason that they fell in love with them wasn't the fact of how they played. That's why you love them. That's why I love Lawrence Taylor growing up. That's why I loved Nolan Ryan when I was growing up. That's why I loved Wayne Gretzky when I was growing up. Because of watching them play. And that's how you sell a sport.
God, that was beautiful, Don. That was almost poetic.
I mean, for a borderline illiterate,
that's what I'm saying.
Thank you. Again, I'm being. It's like the opposite of the Yankees. I'm being graded because of really. What do you expect?
It's a low bar, Don. But you get Bear, a B+.
Oh, it's you know it's. On
I can't
the
read.
Javier in the Bronx, you're on ESPN New York. How are you, Javier?
Hey, Don, Peter, how's it going?
Oh, terrific.
Peter, good job on the album, man. Thank you for putting it on to the lovely and brilliant Belle the Wonder.
Ooh, thank you. She's very, very good. And who was the first one you said?
Yeah, Belle the Wonder. That's her name, right?
Yeah. I thought you said someone else first. But, yeah, thank you, man.
Yeah. First on the album. So, two quick points about the All-Star game. I thought the mic thing, I think it interfered with Xander Bogaerts' at-bat. I kind of, you know, talking to me, like, let's say I'm batting up. I don't want you talking to me, man. I mean, yeah, I'm telling you the first, the fastball and that's great, but, yeah, and the jerseys also, they were terrible. Yeah. I thought the navy blue one had potential slightly because it had a little retro look to it. But yeah, they were terrible. And about the Yankees, I definitely wanted to point out that if they don't win at least six of these eight upcoming games that they got against them, I think they're done. And the rest of the schedule doesn't really look that easy either. I know they played them a few times again and some games against Tampa Bay, but yeah, man.
Hey, you're right. That's probably right because you're talking about 2 4-game series, right, Javier? So in order to win 6 of the 8, you've got to win 3 out of 4 in both of them, and that's going to be tough to do. And I don't know at this stage of the game, Peter, when we're getting deep into the 80s as far as games played, whether splitting the two is going to be enough. Now, we'll see what they do with the Phillies, and we'll see what the Red Sox do with everybody else they have to play. But it's moving time. And can they go from getting swept in back-to-back 3-game series against the Red Sox to now winning 3 out of 4? Because not only did they do that, Peter, they won the last 2 series they played going into the break. You take 3 out of 4 from the Red Sox. Now we might be talking about something here. Now we might be talking about him turning the corner a bit. Get another great start out of Cole. Maybe Chapman comes out of the bullpen and gets back to normal again. These are the things we need to see. But really, right now, they're going into this 4-game series. Who's their closer? Can you afford Chapman's first appearance in the second half of the season to be tomorrow up 2-1 in the ninth?
I know. You almost need to like luck into some situations that just aren't that close. Some 3-run leads.
You know, which, by the way, or be down and just get him in the game.
Right. And try to start finding his way back. Listen, I don't think the guy's finished. Baseball's a very mental game, and we talked about this. Why did Gary Sanchez all of a sudden start hitting?
Yeah.
You know, why was Francisco Lindor non-existent? People go into phases. I'm sure Chapman will bounce back from this, but you got to find a way to bring him back.
Well, yeah, you're not gonna bounce back like it just all of a sudden it's there. It might take a couple of non-save appearances, kind of mop-up roles to kind of get it back. So I mentioned last time we saw him was in a what was it a 12-1 game, and he ended up giving up a two walks and a hit. Now he did strike out the side, but he ended up loading the bases to do it. All about you till six, and then it's Andrew. With ENN, 1-800-919-3776, Don and Peter on Yes at 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.